You're listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane, 88.1 and 92.3 FM. Good afternoon. You're listening to KYRS. You're also listening to Praxis. And today, at least in Spokane and many other cities around the country, is Indigenous Peoples Day. And I wanted to bring in a panel of powerful Indigenous women to talk with me today to celebrate that. So I'm here so far in the studio with Ingrid Soupcook and Melody Nguyen. And we are going to be joined in a little bit by either one or two more guests. So stay tuned for that. And yeah, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Yeah. I don't know who wants to start, but I'd love to just hear a little bit about who you are, where you're from.
Well, I'm Melody Nguyen. I'm a citizen of the Spokane tribe. I live here in Spokane within the traditional boundaries of the Spokane tribe. And thank you for inviting me. I look forward to today.
Hello, good afternoon, buenas tardes, and my name is Ingrid Soupcook. I am Indigenous Mayan, Kachikel and Kachi. My family has been in Spokane for about 15 years. I was born and raised in Guatemala and lived half my life there and half my life here.
Great. So I guess that kind of brings me to just like a really foundational point around like what indigeneity means, because obviously, you know, Melody, you're here on your land, you know, that is yours, and you're Indigenous and transplanted here from there. So I don't know if either of you want to kick that off, just kind of what that idea means.
Okay. it's a very interesting question, talking about what does being Indigenous mean and indigeneity. I think for myself, defining what it means to be an Indigenous person and mostly an Indigenous woman is the way that I was brought up, and my language, my culture, my traditions, very traditional Indigenous communities in Guatemala. Colonization happened a little bit differently in Latin America than it did in North America. Still, both were extremely devastating for our communities, but we were never placed in a system of reservations, and so our communities continue to live on ancestral land, even though we have technically no sovereignty as nations. But as that, we have been able to preserve a lot of our languages and our traditions because we've been so isolated from a lot of the initiatives of colonization that have really focused on assimilation and basically kind of washing our culture out. So to be Indigenous, I think, especially in this time of history, is so complicated because you have so many generations of Indigenous people that have gone through so much change that now, even looking at my grandmother's generation and myself, where my grandmother only spoke her Indigenous language, never went to school, and barely wore shoes until she was, I don't know, her 30s. And myself, being able to speak three different languages, have achieved by Western standards all this education, it still means that I'm Indigenous. And I think that's something that we will continue to redefine as time goes on, because we're also seeing a lot of people move back and kind of reconcile that also as their identity.
I guess all I could really add to that really eloquent explanation, thank you, is that being of the land and for the land and from the land. And so, you know, that's what our people here in this area have been here since time immemorial, and we have a relationship that encompasses all of that and then into the future too. And so, you know, that's what makes us Indigenous. I'm grateful that you included the language in that, because the land, this place, knows our language, it knows our stories and our knowledges and everything. And so, you know, we have that kind of access to who we are and who our ancestors are, that I think, you know, we are pleased to share that when someone is willing to listen.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, that question of sharing is kind of a prime question because, you know, we're here now, come on in. We're about to be joined by Diane as well. So I'm going to put my question on pause and and welcome her on. So sorry to throw you right onto the mic, but do you want to just briefly introduce yourself, talk a little bit about who you are and where you're from?
Hello, I'm Diane Covington. I am an artist. I'm Colville and Spokane tribes. I just came from the res. I'm not used to driving in the city. I went around the block a couple times. I'm out of breath, but I'm glad I made it. Now I know where to come. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, and we were just talking. I don't know if you know. This is Ingrid Subkook. She's with
Hello.
Us. You know Melody.
Yes.
And now we're all here. So if you could share just a little bit, we were just talking about the kind of the question of indigeneity, of being indigenous, and kind of what the core of that is to you and what you want people who aren't perhaps to understand about that.
Well, for to begin with, happy Indigenous Peoples Day. I think that's mm-hmm. pretty cool. Mm-hmm. It's not like this everywhere. Some days it's Columbus Day and they're having lots of sales on all kinds of stuff. So but I don't know. I know that I've been acutely aware of some kind of something going on since I was little because I'm not full Indigenous. I'm half. I'm half Indian and half Irish. And so ever since I was little, I've been aware that one side of my family was different than the other side. And so I don't know. It's a big question, and I don't really know the answer, but I'm glad we're exploring it here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm really glad that all of you could be here because you all have different, we're all at a different part of the spectrum. So, I guess so. Obviously, we're here now. We're here in 2018. A lot of terrible things have happened, you know, starting with, if you want to start with Columbus's arrival, which some people are commemorating today, as you said. Mm-hmm. And here we are now. So how does it look to begin to repair those relationships, to repair the settler culture's relationships to the land and to Indigenous people? What does that look like for each of you?
I guess I would prefer to pose that question to the settlers. You know, I would prefer to answer it from the Indigenous place. So I'll let someone else start after that.
Well, I know in Canada they talk, they're going through a thing, and I don't know that much about it, but reparations and then there's another word I can't think of that. For one thing, I've just recently become, I don't know what the word is, like I fessed up to only being half Indian. I'm, and that's how I think of it. I'm only half Indian. So I benefit from white entitlement sometimes, especially because I grew up all over the place, away from the res, got a little bit of school. And so my dad taught us how to go act in the city and how to use big words and how to, quote unquote, pass. And because I'm half, people have been unsure. I've had people come up and speak Spanish to me. And strangely, I always felt bad that I didn't know how to answer, which is weird. But I went blank.
But so maybe just like the getting, like you said, you know, fessing up, kind of like being honest about what our historical relationships with each other are and what they mean now.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I was going to say. And it's, I have had the unique viewpoint of seeing what it's like for my dad as a dark-skinned man in the world, and then being around my white mom who had a different experience in society. So I learned from my mom, and I you know, I can go out there and pass sometimes, and then other times I. And here's another thing about it is that because I've been, there are constant microaggressions and we're wounded. Okay, so sometimes I go, am I just being too sensitive, or is this, are they really? So sometimes it's hard to decipher, is that person really being overtly ugly, or am I just too acutely sensitive to that kind of stuff? Mm-hmm.
I would say when we talk about reconciling a lot of our history is I really think that what we're missing is humility, humility as a country. And I don't only speak as the United States, but as somebody who grew up in Guatemala, too, I say as a country in Guatemala and so many other countries that have had this history and still have a lot of indigenous presence, to really have the humility to accept that that is part of our history, and to accept that there was a lot of wrong done to our communities, and that there is a lot of trauma and hurt and so much that has been dismissed about us as a people, so that we can move forward. Because in this current age that we're at, we're not as isolated anymore, and we are having to interact, and we do have people who are no longer, you know, just marrying within their indigenous tribes or communities, but they're marrying other people from different parts of the world. And what tends to happen is that struggle to say, what identity do I identify with, and how do I reconcile this, as you were mentioning, if I'm white and I'm indigenous? And it's something that I myself having to think as an indigenous woman who is married to a white man, one of the things that comes into my decision on whether or not I want to have kids, because how do I communicate that if this world is still not talking about reconciliation and reparations between our cultures? So, yeah.
So we have honesty and humility, and I guess I would add hospitality. So, you know, the Spokane tribe was known for its hospitality. And if we stay true to who we are, then we hold to that value. But the honesty and the humility from the settlers around us, and then from ourselves too, and in dealing with our issues, you know, I think would start that process.
Mm-hmm. And so something last week, I was having a completely separate conversation with a guest, and he was talking about the influence of Christian thought on our culture. And we ended up talking about colonization as part of that, because the stories are intertwined. And he characterized, and he's a white guy, Jewish guy, he characterized indigeneity as being about place fundamentally, that it's not about time or linear space, it's about a place and what happens there. So how do you think we can start in this world we're in right now to center place more? Like what would that look like for people who aren't used to thinking that way, or even who want to marry it into their daily life more?
I'm not really sure that I understand your question. I know that place is a big part of it. And coming here today, I was thinking of about all the indigenous people, the earth over, and the movement, the resurgence that's going on right now, the earth over, and the people in New Zealand, the people, native people everywhere, and it is about place. It's we've been learning some history. I've been learning some of the Spokane tribal history, and I used to magically cut off in my mind that, okay, this is the reservation, that's where the Indians are. This is the city, that's where the non-Indians are. This is Canada, that's where the lines draw. And the Canadian line crossed several tribes across the United States and Canada. So there are tribal peoples on both sides of the line. And we moved around and we crossed that imaginary line. And now that it's there, we can't cross it anymore. It's just strange. It's strange.
So I guess if we had a seat at the table around making decisions for land use, an authentic seat at the table, not a token seat, then we could start to inform, and maybe through experience, people could start to then like witness how we interact with the land, how we think about it, how we want for it. And then they would become, you know, that much closer to being educated about what it means. And a lot of people get it just because they're connected enough in their heart and mind and their gut. They get it, you know, but not everyone does. Obviously, you can look out the window here.
I actually just found today, I'll open it up, I found a really good resource on this, because I saw there's been a lot of good in my social media world, which is, you know, not everyone's, but I've seen a lot of really good informative Indigenous Peoples Day posts today. And someone shared this map that's at native-land.ca. And it's a mostly user-generated map. And you can zoom in and look at territory, you can look at language, and it, you can see exactly how, what Diane was saying, that it sprawls across the U.S.-Canada border, the U.S.-Mexico border, the state lines. So yeah, it's a really great resource. If people want to check it out, I can put a link up. And I guess I can just say that I'm trying to overlay the map in my mind of the KYRS signal territory, but if you're listening, you're either in Spokane, Palouse, Coeur d'Alene, possibly Yakima, Kalispell, Okanagan, Nez Perce land.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. And if you're just joining us, you're listening to Praxis on KYRS, Thinner Community Radio, talking with Ingrid Subkook, Melody Wynn, and Diane Covington on Indigenous Peoples Day. So I want to kind of circle back to something Melody just said around having a seat at the table, an authentic seat, I think you said, which kind of comes to the question of power and rebalancing power and, you know, decolonizing all of our systems, our government, et cetera. What does that power look like to each of you?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, I think it's something that we've been, as Indigenous people, having to learn how to do. I would even start there, because in Guatemala, we still have a lot of traditional ancestral, like, government and leadership, but it's not respected. You know, there is one government, and that's the government that matters to our country. And even though we have some representation in that government, it often... people that make it up there are people that lose a lot of themselves along the way, because you're having to learn how to do things that do not come naturally in your culture. And it's a very conflicting feeling to have to do that. And of course, we want to have more recognition and more rights and even just some reconciliation as people. But if we don't have the leadership, then we just can't really do it. And I mean, ideally it would be to have our government systems respected, and that we have true sovereignty over the decisions that we make and the things that are beneficial for our people. But simply we're not seeing it. But I do think that we're at a point in time where we are realizing all the damage that we have caused to our land and to our world, and that it is no longer sustainable. And we see that there's so much research and, like, I would say Western research that is going back and finding all these different things about how we need to take care of the land, what education systems work and what government systems work. And all of them tend to go back to indigenous systems. And it's as if it's this big discovery, which sounds very familiar, like Columbus discovering North America and America in general. But we are going back to that. And the reason is because our systems have lasted for so long. And these are systems that have been established over thousands of years and that have preserved so much of our culture. And it must be because we are doing at least something right or trying to. So hopefully with all this new, quote unquote, research that they're saying is very innovative, we see that there's more respect as well for indigenous points of view and worldviews.
I have looked back at in the literature that does exist about us, and power is really a sort of a different concept if you go pre-colonial. Mm-hmm. The only power that I found referenced was the personal kind of power to help your people, to take care of yourself, to take care of your people, to deliver on your purpose that you brought for the people, you know. After the fur traders showed up, that's when the power over resources starts to show up. And the leadership that you mentioned, we just created some, well, we just, we just put together some leadership curriculum, and we delivered that to two groups this summer in cooperation with Washington State University and the Tribal Youth Summer Employment Program and the Wahlponet School, and the result was phenomenal. I could tell stories all day about those two camps, but one thing, whenever we present that leadership curriculum to outside organizations, they really see how different that is from the leadership curriculums that they've encountered before. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that kind of tells us that we really had something special and we still have the capacity to bring that forward and into the future in a good way.
Yeah, that's a little bit of what I was getting at in my brain, with not in my mouth, with that question is how... You know, we're in such an intense, like, domination style power over setup that, you know, and for me, like, it's not, definitely not part of my culture per se, but my political persuasion is definitely power with, you know, and kind of a more horizontal, everyone using their personal power kind of model. And it seems daunting often to move that into this overwhelming system that we have.
It does seem daunting and overwhelming. And what helps me is that this is a young country. Natives have been here for quite a while compared to how long this has been a country. And the different, like you were talking about, different structures and like there's I'm going to oversimplify, and I don't mean to, but I am not that articulate. In the non-native, there's one leader, and then it's kind of, there are people underneath. And with us, it's like a circle, and I may have some art skills or some art sumish, and so I'm the leader of art, and somebody else has medicine skills, and they're the leader. So we all have our special skills and have leadership abilities. And so that's a really healing thing. Yeah, I mean, that's not how I grew up. I am a first generation English speaker on my dad's side. He grew up speaking Indian. I grew up speaking English. It's lost unless I go and really try and learn the language, and I'll probably still use some of it wrong. It's that fast, that happened that fast. So what I'm saying is that things can happen fast, and so that gives me hope.
Yeah, and I guess on hope, what's inspiring you the most right now in terms of movements, things that individual Indigenous people you know are doing, communities, your own community or around the world? What's been most inspirational to you in the recent past?
Locally, this is Indigenous Peoples Day here in Spokane, the town named after the Spokane tribe, which really, if we said it right, it would be Spokane-y. So here we are, and, I don't know, I'm thinking of Kalamazoo, Michigan, which is where I lived before, and that's an Indian name. And I'm thinking of all these places in the United States with Indian names, and so we can bring awareness that we're still here, and you might not see us, but without our feathers, but we're here, and we're doing things, and there's a resurgence, and
yeah. I would say that so much, so much that really, I spent 2 years working in Guatemala after I graduated from Whitworth University. I went back because I really wanted to reconnect with my culture and my people and be back in my land and really find what was my passion because I just became so disillusioned with a lot of the educational system here. I am so incredibly impressed by the resilience of our people and the courage and also just the incredible humility that we have as a people to continue to fight and want better and protect and love. And that is something that is so inspirational. And I think it's also a time where a lot of us, for various reasons, have had to leave our people, have had to leave our homes and moved other places and are still trying to hold on to our identity. For me, moving here, I think really cemented my Indigenous identity because it was just me and my family. So I had to learn as much as I could about my history and my people and preserve my language and preserve all these things because I was so afraid that I might lose it. Because growing up in Latin America as an Indigenous person, you don't learn that there are Indigenous people in North America. and still my family to this day, I will tell them back in Guatemala, there are Indigenous people here. And they're like, oh, that's not possible because they've never seen it. And they just have never learned that history. So I took it a lot upon myself to do that. But one of the things that I see is that it's not just me, even though for a long time it felt like it was just me, but there are so many other incredible Indigenous Mayan and Aztec and Incan descendants that are all over this continent and that are hanging on to their identity and redefining it and also fighting for better education around those systems and about our identity. So I think we are at a point in history where we are finally being taken serious because by Western standards, we have made it, we have achieved it, and we have learned their language, we have learned their systems, and now we can actually rewrite a lot of that history because so much of our history has been written from a colonizing perspective. And now we're here and we're able to say, that's not how it happened. And I can tell you that because I was on the other side of it. And so history has to be told on both sides in order to have a full picture. And for 500 years, that has not been the way we have seen history. And so I think it is really hopeful. And of course, we have to fight for those seats and we have to fight to have that voice. But I think a lot of us are very, very much at a point we're so encouraged to do so and we feel so passionate and so we're going to go for it and we are going for it. So I think it is really hopeful to see that there are so many people doing it through the best way they can, whether it is through art to music, activism, all these different things. So I think it's great.
And that's exactly what inspires me and gives me hope is the work. So like you said, we have artists in our community, and we have young people who really engaged with that leadership curriculum, and we have even younger people than that who are seeking knowledge on their own and gaining it just by that curiosity, that natural curiosity that young people have. And we have older people who are still engaged, even though by all rights in our society in the United States. They could be traveling the world or retired or something, but they're remaining engaged in the work of decolonizing and indigenizing and preserving and teaching.
Yeah, and that's, I think it's starting, I see it from my perspective. I'm seeing the people you're talking about, you know, emerging as really strong voices and getting to hear from them, which is so valuable because I was certainly not educated about anything about the place that I live before 150 years ago, you know, mm-hmm. and even those 150 years were sterilized to say the least. So, what's one thing in your history or that you wish was more broadly known by the public at large, by white people, by non-Indigenous people in general?
Well, I wish that more people realized that we thrived. You know, there's a narrative of starvation and just barely surviving, you know, but our people thrived. That's why how we had art and how we had spirituality, because we had time to do that, even amidst the work that we were engaged with for, you know, to gather from the land and to have that relationship with the land and with the yearly cycle and the monthly cycle and all of that. We were still creating art and creating song and story, and I wish more people would, you know about that narrative too.
I would say even that we're still here as Native people. I think starting there, I remember when I first moved to the United States and I would tell people that I'm Mayan, they'd be like, whoa, we thought the Mayans went extinct or that they died off. And because there isn't any history or education around that. But the truth is, yeah, colonization happened, but we're still here. And as you were mentioning, we're still thriving and we're survivors, and we're here because we need to take care of this land and take care of our Mother Earth. And I think as long as we have that drive, we will continue to be here despite the atrocities that have happened in the 500 years of colonization. We are still resisting. We are still here, and we are still as strong as ever.
Yeah. Do any of you have any questions for each other? I'm just curious. No pressure.
No, I guess I'll mention, since we have just, I grew up in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, and Spokane, and so I didn't grow up on the reservation. We grew up in Spokane with my grandma, and I guess it was this time of year, I didn't pay attention, but we'd have gatherings at the Indian Center or dances, and we'd eat together, and we're doing that today. After this, we're going to go, well, not at the Indian Center, but I'm not sure, I'll find it. We're going somewhere, and we're going to do what we did in the old days. So we're still carrying on those traditions, and they might change a little bit. Some things change, but I'm grandma age now, so I'm carrying on the grandma things that my grandma did, and thriving. I like that word.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And how does, this is a Diane question, I guess. How does your art fit in to your identity as a whole?
You know, I did not know that I did quote unquote interior Salish women until my friend Shelley pointed it out, which was obvious. But I lived in Michigan for quite a while. I went to art school a little bit. A bunch of things happened in my life and I totally lost my art. I sat that for like 10, 15 years. There was no art. I thought it was gone forever. I cut ahead like 15 years and I went to Inchilim, to the Colville Reservation, to learn my language, and my art came back full force. It's just full force. And so mostly what I do paint is in acrylic is interior Salish women and interior Salish and tribes, Spokane, Colville, Coeur d'Alene, Kalispell, Salish and Kootenai, and I'm an artist because I have trouble speaking, but it's what I live for. It's my passion. I would love to see. I just have a vision of this Spokane town that 200 years ago our great-great-grandparents were right here fishing for salmon and digging camas. To some people, that's ancient history. To me, it's alive and real and right in front of my face here. And I just want to bring that vision. It's my desire just to bring it to here, and I don't know how, but it's strong. So hopefully in the next few years, you'll be seeing some of the Salish women around town.
Nice. Thanks for making a talking exception for us today.
Yeah.
I guess how about, I don't know as much about Melody. I know Ingrid, but with either of you, how does your work, quote unquote, tie in, kind of your life's work, tie in with your identity as an Indigenous person?
I would say that, art has also been a really big part of my life. And unfortunately, as you were mentioning about going 10 years without doing that, I think I'm right about in that period of time that I remember learning so many things, from traditional weavings to knitting to all these things from my grandmother and then my mother when we moved here as well. And I used to draw and do a lot of these things that I really loved. And then I think just with moving here and trying to find myself, and also because I speak Spanish, identifying as Latina, but also having a struggle to identify as Native American because I didn't really understand, I lost a lot of that. And I actually haven't done a lot of art in, I would say, about 8 years. So it's been a long time. But through that, I think I also found... I found my voice as a storyteller, and as somebody who can really talk about not only my experience, but Indigenous peoples in Latin America. And I really love telling stories, because one of the things that I really struggle with is writing, and not something that I'm comfortable with, especially because English is my third language. And I always have not a lot of confidence in my writing. And so when I have to write my story or my personal statement for school and all these different things, it was such a panic because I just couldn't do it. But I could say it. And I think being able to be an instrument for my community and my people, to be able to communicate who we are and what we are about and many different languages, is something that I think I've found myself being very, very proud in, and also reconciling my identity.
I want to talk to you more about stories and storytelling for sure. But I guess I went back as a mature student to pursue education, and I just finished that up this last May. So I've been kind of, last winter, just like really immersed in trying to finish up that degree, do that kind of work. Since then, I've just been kind of paying attention to how people respond to the things that I have to offer, because how they respond, then I can use that to educate, and then also to lift up the younger people who are coming after us, so that they can be more empowered and more connected and in that way have that kind of wellness that will keep moving us forward from the past, the good from the past.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you're just joining us toward the end of the hour here, you're listening to Praxis on KYRS, Thin Air Community Radio. I'm hosting a roundtable panel of Indigenous women for Indigenous Peoples Day here in Spokane. Ingrid Soupcook, Melody Nguyen, and Diane Covington are all here in the studio with me. So this is primarily a show around action, hence the name, and activism. So I would love to hear from each of you a little bit about what is an issue that you wish more people, that you want to invite listeners to become more aware of and involved in and active around.
I would say healthcare. That's something that I've been really passionate about, and specifically My grandmother was a medicine woman in our community, and my mother has inherited that. And so my passion for education really came through. I wanted to be a doctor because I wanted to understand Western medicine, because I also see the disservice that it has done to our indigenous communities in Guatemala. There's so much mistrust in Western medicine because of the history of that medicine on our people as well. And in Guatemala specifically, we have still a very strong indigenous health system where a lot of us will access that before we access Western medicine, but it's something that's not understood. And even people that go through that system of indigenous medicine often don't communicate that to their Western doctor because of the repercussions of that, because of being humiliated or the discrimination or all of that that comes with it. And so I really feel strongly about advocating for that and also respecting indigenous knowledge and health systems, because they've existed for hundreds of thousands of years, but also that there is some good in some Western medicine, and what can we do to reconcile that? Because the truth of the matter is that our people, especially in places like Guatemala, we live among each other and we are brothers and sisters and we share all this knowledge, but there's still quite a separation with that. And again, what's fascinating to me as somebody who went through college really with that goal of going to become a medical doctor, is that a lot of the research that's now being done on ways to practice medicine and how to honor all of that is going back to indigenous roots and indigenous mm-hmm. health systems. But for me, it's fascinating that there's so little respect for traditional healers in our communities and so much for somebody who graduates as an MD, even though maybe they're trying to go back and learn more indigenous medicine. So why isn't there respect for both? Mm-hmm. And why is there such a disrespect for our traditional healers? And so I'm a really big advocate for that, because I feel like that needs to be known and it needs to be respected and it needs to be something that people need to stop stealing, feeling like they're reinventing it or all of a sudden discovering it.
Mm-hmm. So I'll also welcome real quick Shelley Boyd, who just joined us. I was just asking about an issue around activism that you wish people would get involved with, either around indigeneity or something that's just close to you in general. But if you want to start by just saying a little bit about who you are, where you're from, what your story is?
Sure. White peace noxil and chai squeeze preset kintalin chalium. So my name is Shelley Boyd and I'm from Inchilim, Washington. I'm a member of the Colville Confederated Tribes Arrow Lakes Band. I'm Sinaichkst. And I think first I'd like to thank you for the invitation and just the topic and being able to sit here and listen to women that I respect and this point of view being looked at. I think that one of the things that is coming to light now on a larger level is the perspective that we have as indigenous people. And beyond that, the perspective that we have as indigenous women. And so thank you for the invitation and just, you know, providing a large opportunity to speak about these things. I think if, you know, we were to talk about anything with me, to where my life has gone so far, I've had, I guess, we all have interesting lives. My life's been almost typical for an indigenous woman, but it's maybe unique to a non-indigenous woman. I had a child very young. I went ahead and went to college. I got my education and my master's from Gonzaga. I worked as a school counselor for several years, and one of the things that I think on the personal level, we start to address the things that hurt us most, and that's pain and loss. And it took me a long time to realize and understand that it was our ways that were really the medicine for that in our language, in our medicine, in our perspective, which is unique. I think one of the things that I'm happy about is that right now I think the country's looking a little bit more at that. One of the sad things about that is they're looking at that because of what's happening to us on a larger political level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the emergency solution that they're looking for now, well, rather than preventative and holistic, and so much of what Indigenous solutions and systems look like.
Well,
to me,
no, I think that that's a great point. I don't think it's an emergency. I think it's something that we've lived under for a long time, but it's being looked at right now because everybody's having to deal with it. There's no question of how women are looked at right now, and even how the 99% is looking. I think that one of the things that really has struck me lately is a quote from Winona LaDuc, where she talked about that 1% and how we always talk about the 1%, but we're the 99%. It's time for us to start acting like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so that kind of ties into a lot of different activist-y issues for people to jump onto, right? Just those common denominator issues in general.
Absolutely. I think one of the things that I do right now is I'm a facilitator for the Colville tribe, for the Arrow Lakes people. We were declared extinct in 1956. And people can look at that from a lot of different reasons, right? Like, why is anyone declared extinct? That's somebody's convenience. Mm-hmm. And right now, one of the things that I'm looking at, if we were looking at, I guess, the Supreme Court and what's going on there. In Canada right now, it is through the legal process that we are becoming acknowledged, that we are becoming, you know, that one of the things that justice is supposed to do is be blind, right? Except to the truth. And we have to follow that truth. And unless we make our justice system blind, which right now, I guess the good thing is we're all looking at this. We're all coming together. We all are being the 99%. Maybe we're being forced to be the 99%, or to acknowledge that we are the 99%, not forced to. We have been the 99%. But we're definitely in a time that is hopeful in a different way. I think there's never been a greater time in some ways that people are connecting, people are looking at the truth, people are talking about the truth, and people like yourself are just lending this platform to speak about some hard things on a hard day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, thanks for coming in.
I like the word emergency because it emerge. It's time to emerge. It is an emergency. I like that.
And Melody or Diane, do you have an issue that you want to lift up and invite people to act on? No pressure. Thanks for sharing a mic over there.
The only thing that comes to mind, and I could probably talk about this for a long time, maybe not very well, so I won't, but is you touched on it a little bit when people steal from us and then act like it was their idea. What's the word for that?
Appropriation.
That's a big deal to me lately, and so that's kind of, I'll be doing some art about that, but rather than talking about it right now.
I'm sorry, what was the question? I'm a little starstruck sitting here.
Just if you have a specific, because this show primarily focuses on activism most of the time, if there's an issue that you want to kind of invite people into action on that's,
I guess,
close to you.
I guess it would be called education in a way. Not education as far as, like, you know, primary or secondary or post-secondary, but it is that too. But for us to educate ourselves and each other about how to move forward. So, like I said before, you know, taking what worked from the past, bringing it to this reality where we are in right now, and moving through to where we want to be in a way that makes sense to us, and that we have that power and that capacity to do that. And so that would be something that I would like to invite others to talk more about. And, you know, then the listening that it takes to achieve that, and, you know, the best way that I've found to get people to actually open up and listen is through story. I still want to talk to you about stories.
So. Yeah.
You know, one of the things I think that, and I don't know how much you guys have talked about this, but is our water, of course, mm-hmm. and the salmon, and bringing back it. And there's this saying, you know, bring back the salmon and we'll save the world. And I really, truly believe that. Mm-hmm. We're going to have to look at some hard things. You know, we were just down at the Snake River, of course, looking at four dams that are basically decommissioned, but they're left there keeping the salmon from going further. And, you know, I've heard people talk about climate change, for instance, in the way of, I mean, there's two ways that people, first, it's that real defeatist, like, there's nothing we can do anyway. The second one is, it's just a money pit. It's just a money pit, and we need to roll along. And so really, the bottom line is that climate change, our water, is the most important thing that everyone can look at right now or needs to look at. And it's not hopeless. It's things that we can do. It might feel a little inconvenient in the moment, but it's about showing up and voting first. And then it's about changing some things in your everyday life that are a little bit inconvenient or a lot inconvenient, depending on how far you push it, depending on how much you want for your children and your grandchildren. But I think that the voice that we have here as Indigenous women and as Indigenous people goes back to that connection to the land when we talk about our languages and the differences between our languages. It's true. There's a commerce-based language that is based on getting things, and then there is a land-based language that is about a connection to the land. So my second thing would be learn another language. Learn an Indigenous language. Learn to look at the world in a different way, and it's a powerful paradigm shift.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we just have about a minute or two left, but if anyone has short, I'd love to hear suggestions. This is related, but things that people can do to acknowledge Indigenous Peoples Day beyond today. Let's just do more than one day a year. You know, I always have a hard time with that, with Women's History Month, Black History Month. It's like, let's just keep this rolling. So what's one thing that people can do to acknowledge this day?
I'm going to say you can reach out to somebody and you can ask a question and not be afraid to make that connection. As an Indigenous woman, I don't know how many people come up to me and say, I don't want to offend you, but I have this question. Ask the question, even if it's offensive. And I promise I'll tell you. I promise I'll tell you. And I just ask that you don't get offended by the response.
I think always trying to be as inclusive as possible as well, to remember that a lot of the struggles that we fight for are also an Indigenous struggle, because a lot of things that I see sometimes as an Indigenous woman is that we rally for women's rights and we have thousands of women and other people that show up, and then we rally for, because I also, you know, identify as Latina, for immigration rights, and then that group gets a little smaller. Mm-hmm. And then we rally for Indigenous people's rights, and then that group gets even smaller. And then when you even rally for Indigenous women's and all the causes that we're passionate about, it's probably down to the four of us. And where are all those people that we have been supporting along mm-hmm. the way? And so I think we need to really take a really closer look at a lot of the initiatives that we support, and with what intention are we doing those things, and who are we including in our struggle? Because I think we fail a lot of times in those things. I sometimes feel like I don't have the option to ignore some of these struggles because they affect me at all these different levels. Mm-hmm. But also to check your privilege when it comes to those things, that we all at some level experience some sort of privilege, and to always keep that in mind, because I think it's really important.
Yes.
I would say get to know yourself. Get to know yourself so that you can be in a place where you can listen and support.
And I once again, I just want to say happy Indigenous Day, Spokane.
Mm-hmm. Great. Can we get that in a couple other languages? No pressure. Or an approximation.
Limskaluskalhalt.
Kini.
Great. Well, thank you all so much for being here. If you joined us right at the end, you've been listening to Praxis, hosting a panel of Indigenous women, Shelley Boyd, Melody Wynn, Diane Covington, Ingrid Soup Cook. here in the show. If you missed any of the beginning of it, you can catch the podcast later on tonight, if I do my best, at soundcloud.com/praxisradio, PRAXISRADIO. You can also find that link on kyrs.org. Thanks so much for listening. You're listening to KYRS, Medical Lake Spokane, 88.1 and 92.3 FM.